Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Tuesday, May 18th, 2010 Carrboro Board of Aldermen meeting. Before we begin our regular printed agenda, is Eleanor Blake here? No? Okay. She's newly appointed to the Human Services Commission, and we will give her her charge as a new member at a shortly upcoming meeting, I'm sure. I also have a proclamation that I would like to read. National Public Works Week. Whereas public works services provided in our community are an integral part of our citizens' everyday lives, and whereas the support of an understanding and informed citizenry is vital to the efficient operation of public works systems and programs such as public parks, streets and highways, fleet maintenance, public buildings, and solid waste collection. And whereas the health, safety, and comfort of this community greatly depends on these facilities and services, and whereas the quality and effectiveness of these facilities, as well as their planning, design, and construction, is vitally important and dependent upon the efforts and skill of public works officials, and whereas the efficiency of the qualified and dedicated personnel who staff public works departments is materially influenced by the people's attitude and understanding of the importance of the work that they perform. Now, therefore, be it resolved that I, Mark Chilton, Mayor of the Town of Carrboro, North Carolina, do hereby proclaim the week of May 16th through 22nd as National Public Works Week in the Town of Carrboro, and I call upon all citizens and civic organizations to acquaint themselves with the issues involved in providing our public works and to recognize the contributions which public works officials make every day to our health, safety, comfort, and quality of life. This is the 18th day of May 2010. And I believe, come on up here.
Did you want to say something?
Okay. Well, let me just present that to you and say thanks very much. All right.
Mark, who was that you presented it to?
I do not know.
Eleanor, that is Eleanor Blake. Oh, that's Eleanor Blake.
Yeah, I was wondering why you were giving her the
pen. I don't know.
I think she was a little confused, but
that's cool. But bring that over to her.
Eleanor's with Human Services.
I have your charge.
You're welcome to stand
right here. It's my public work.
I'll just read this and have you sign off.
Okay. They were sending her up, man. I was like, okay, here you go.
Human Services Advisory Commission member, you will study all funding applications received by the town from non-departmental agencies and make recommendations to the Board of Aldermen on these funding requests and perform such other duties as may be assigned from time to time by the Board of Aldermen.
I'll get you to sign that.
I'll trust you this week. Oops. No.
Not a problem.
Thank you.
Just got an email from
it. Okay, now you come. There you go.
Thanks so much. Welcome.
Did you still want to copy that proclamation, though?
I didn't get to see that one, sir.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Would like to, let's see, at this point, I'd like to recognize Carolyn Cole, who is here on a matter not on our printed agenda.
Good evening. My name is Carolyn Cole. I'm a resident of Chapel Hill, formerly of Carrboro. And a member of the Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League. There are two large commercial medical waste incinerators in Alamance County, located a half-mile from Alamance Community College and next to new housing developments. They're owned and operated by Stericycle, the largest medical waste disposal company in the United States, based in Chicago. Last year, Stericycle burned 26.3 million pounds of medical waste in Alamance County from 22 eastern seaboard states. The toxins released from these incinerators do not stop at the Alamance County line. Prevailing winds bring them into Carbo and Orange County, filled with dioxins from burned plastics, mercury, lead, cadmium, particulate matter, acid gases, and more. Both the public's health and the environment are at risk. A public hearing on the Title V permit renewal for Stericycle's Haw River incinerators will take place May 25th at Alamance Community College at 6 p.m. Stericycle's permit to burn will be renewed just prior to the implementation of the October 2009 EPA standards. These standards mandate considerably stricter emission controls. Due to the timing of its permit renewal, Stericycle is likely to continue under the current standards until October 2014. Mecklenburg County, facing a similar renewal situation with BMWNC Medical Waste Incinerator in Matthews, North Carolina, last month passed unanimously a resolution requesting that the North Carolina Environmental Management Commission adopt state rules that implement the EPA's new rules by 2012 rather than 2014. Last night, the Chatham County Commissioners unanimously passed a similar resolution. Tonight, Orange County Commissioners have such a resolution on their consent agenda. I would urge you to consider a similar resolution. The North Carolina Environmental Management Commission will be adopting EPA rules in the very near future. You may be able to encourage them to adopt cleaner air standards sooner rather than later. A copy of the Mecklenburg and Orange resolutions have been provided to you, I believe. I'm happy to work with any or all of you with further information on these medical waste incinerators, standards, and hopefully the passage of such a resolution. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Carolyn, for bringing this to our attention. Were you about to say something?
Yeah. I was going to ask, the resolution that's before us, is that to your liking, the one that
it's
you
It's the same as the counties.
The same as the counties?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's to your liking?
Yeah, that was
okay, helpful. Then I'd like to move the resolution.
Second.
All right. The resolution's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? All right. All those in favor of the resolution signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The matter passed unanimously.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
See you in the jury room. Yeah.
Thanks for keeping us up to date on the issue. Tim Peck.
Hey, I just wanted to thank all of you for supporting the Great Unleashing Transition work this weekend. It was a really nice event, a lot of good energy. I see positive things coming out of it, so I wanted to let you know that your support was appreciated and that it was a good thing. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. I believe with that we are. Ellen Perry.
Sorry.
Does it matter?
I can't sign up.
Oh.
I can't reach it.
Well, and it's up here by now anyway.
Well,
so.
I couldn't reach it anyway.
All right.
Okay. So, why I'm up here tonight is to tell y'all something that just happened in the Division of Mental Health, Substance Abuse, and DD. Lisa Wainwright resigned as of August. She's out. John Tote, who is the Mental Health Association Executive Director, he's coming in. I don't know. I mean, he's kind of mental health mostly. So DD population's going to kind of get shifted backwards a little bit, and he's for mental health mostly. So I'm very concerned about it. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to, I mean, I don't know what we can do about it, but, you know.
You know what I think would be a really good thing to do? Would be to contact him and try and have a conversation, your group or you as a representative of your group, and say, we admire the work you've done in mental health. We'd like to talk a little bit about people with other disabilities. Okay. And just kind of feel him out. But before you rush to conclusions that he's not going to be supportive of DD, talk to him about it.
Well, I intend to.
Yeah.
But I just thought I'd let you all know what was going on.
Yeah, because I think he's been a pretty good guy with some...
Well, I've heard some other things.
Oh, okay.
I've heard a whole lot of other things.
Yeah.
That's not too good about him.
Talk to the man. Maybe he doesn't know people have those concerns.
Well, he didn't look after Nova houses very well.
Oh.
So that's what kind of concerns me.
Yeah.
That's what kind of concerns.
Hard to make up for that.
Yeah. That's what kind of concerns me. The Club Nova apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And the Mental Health Association.
Huh.
They two or three of the, a lot of participants have written to him. Nothing.
Hmm.
So.
But Ellen, Jack is right. I think this is the first step.
Yeah. But I just thought I'd tell you all what was happening.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank
it's good
you.
To give us a heads up.
So that you all would have the heads up. So all if right. I come back and tell y'all, get rid of him. Let's get rid of him. Okay.
I wish we all were right. as powerful as some people think.
Well, hey, you all are powerful. You know that?
Yeah.
Thank you
Working
all.
Working with
Thanks.
Many
Thanks,
of
them.
Thanks,
Ellen.
Thanks,
yes.
Ellen, for sure.
Appreciate
all
it.
Right.
Thanks, Ellen.
Okay.
Okay, I believe that brings us to the consent agenda. Mr. Manager?
Item 1 is approval of the minutes of the previous meetings of April 27th and May 11th. Excuse me. Item 2 is a request to issue permits for the annual 4 on the 4th road race, the Carborough 10K road race, and the Gallup and Gorge 8K road race. Item 3 is a resolution approving the 5-year update to the Orange County Hazard Mitigation Plan. Item 4 is a request to set a public hearing on miscellaneous amendments to the land use ordinance. Item 5 is a request for approval of a municipal agreement with the North Carolina Department of Transportation to hold 2 safe routes to school events. And item 6 is a resolution approving a memorandum of understanding setting forth terms under which Sarah Williamson will provide town clerk services following her retirement.
I'd like to move items 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6.
And would you leave out
number 3 is the one
I'd like to pull 4.
I mean four.
Okay, and leaving out 4.
So there's comments on 3 and 4, is that right?
Right,
yeah.
And I want to add to my motion the David Clinton appointment to the planning board and the resolution seeking redirection of the federal war money.
So if I may just clarify, the motion is for consent agenda items 1, 2, 5, and 6. As well as the appointing David Clinton to the planning board.
And the resolution and seeking redirection of federal war funds towards supportive communities.
Okay.
I second
it. Okay. It's been moved and seconded.
He's so fast.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed. The matter passed unanimously. Talk about omnibus legislation. All right. Item 3, a resolution approving resolution approving 5-year update to the Orange County Hazard Mitigation Plan.
I had some questions about it. A couple of us did, but the question I had, which first of all, there's an indication that there's maps with this document, and I don't know that I didn't get any maps, so. I'm wondering if there's maps that we should be seeing with it. Second, I had some questions about why chemical spills is included, but Sharon Harris and the plans for Sharon Harris are not included. And that's just a simple version.
I think that's because Sharon Harris is safe.
Yeah, we know that.
So we don't have to include it in our plan.
And I thought it was interesting that although, and I know this is going to sound funny, so don't, but don't laugh. Although volcanoes is in one list, it's left out of another list. And I, you know, folks may not be aware, but we're actually positioned in the line, the exact line of the Carolina Slate Belt and the Triassic belt, which is the old volcanic area. And I just think it's kind of interesting that the earthquakes are in and volcanoes are out.
They're right under Sharon Harris.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons we're concerned about it. And I'm also, you know, interested in the question of what kind of a metric was used to look at this report, because Carrboro and Hillsborough are considered very small, and it seems like the assessment is done by being four square miles of municipality rather than the density of our population. And in the event of a hazard, certainly it would be by population that we would be most concerned. So, you know, I think there's some reasoning that I would question about how you know, the measure of the hazard is looked at by square miles rather than by population at risk.
I also just wanted to agree with Randy that especially considering the current situation in the Gulf, where we have this continual leak into the Gulf, a big hazard. We also have our local what's that rig called that collapsed, Deepwater Horizon, which is Sharon Harris, and as such, though it has nothing fortunately happened till now, there is a chance of there something happening. Just a couple months ago, the Obama administration was saying that deepwater oil extraction was a very safe practice, and we have seen nuclear accidents, and it's especially important for us to consider Sharon Harris in light of the fact that as we look to find alternative sources of energy with climate change, that the nuclear option is not a viable one because it has all these side effects and problems. So as we consider what our local mitigation plan is and realize how costly it could be to have something similar to cleanup that's being called for in the Gulf, as community members of Carrboro, we should always speak out against expansion of nuclear and the phase out of nuclear as it exists locally. There have been studies that show
for the phase out.
Yeah, and it's because studies have shown that if something were to happen at Sharon Harris, all of Orange County would be affected by it, and we would, if it were that bad, if it were as bad as some predictions describe, we'd have to move from Orange County, irrespective of whatever safeguard measures we might have in place now. So I just wanted an update from Trish, and we've been interchanging emails a little bit about it. And I understand it's not a requirement for this study, but because the only requirements are natural disasters, but it is an opportunity to just get an update for what, if any, safeguards exist under that plan.
Steve, if we reschedule this as a regular agenda item, do you think we could get someone from the county to speak to these various questions till I come to the meeting?
I can't speak for the county, but I would assume so.
Because I mean, a lot of questions are raised, and I don't think we're going to answer them tonight.
Yeah, I don't.
And I thought
Trish may have some answers, but I'm not sure she has all.
We also got a lot of material in different emails today. That's hard when you get different emails to digest, and it would be nice to have all that in the packet together for a future discussion.
Okay, well, I'll take that as a motion that we bring this matter back.
Please do.
In a couple of weeks.
Second.
We'll have to look at exactly when. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the matter passes unanimously.
Thank
all right,
you.
That's a good idea. And what was consent agenda
number
item four?
Number four is public hearings to consider miscellaneous land use ordinance amendments.
All right.
Number two is establishing a new use electronic gaming operations and associated dimensional and locational requirements. This, also known as an internet sweepstake cafe, has been proliferated throughout the state since court ruling that it was not subject to state law. These businesses sell browsing time on the internet, a side benefit of which is free credits to play internet sweepstakes. The businesses are especially common in low-income neighborhoods and towns.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we want this?
It's not that we want it.
I think there was an inquiry.
Why? What's the?
There's an applicant out there.
Because the problem is right now we don't have a category that deals with it, and so it fits in a generic category probably.
So if we have
the generic category doesn't have any conditions or requirements or hours of limitation or other things.
I see. In other words,
no, this is
as it stands right now, that type of business might be permitted as, say, like a coffee shop right now. And what
so this
staff is putting forward, I think, is basically something that would really narrowly define it and then really narrowly define
to constrain it.
The conditions under which it can be
okay,
undertaken
so
lawfully.
Okay.
And there is some conversation that there may be legislation introduced that would ban these activities in North Carolina.
How have local governments responded? Have they, is there an active moratoriums that some local governments have?
Not so much moratoriums, no, because what's happened is that many, many, many local governments have rather quickly done exactly what we've done here. And this, what we've done here is a modification of what we've done in some other places for some of other clients. And there's a lot of municipalities that have adopted two things, usually some kind of ordinance restricting or amendment to their zoning ordinances, as well as privilege license ordinances. Not surprisingly, there have been lawsuits filed against those in, I forget where, one or two places, I'm not sure, one or two other cities. I can't remember which city it is. I've talked with their attorneys, but there has been a fairly, there's been a lot, immense interest, I would say. There's been discussions at the municipal attorneys' meetings and the planners of, and the listservs have had a great deal of conversation about this. And it's something that has kind of very, very quickly swept over the state to the point where one of the little towns that I represent, much smaller than this place, already has four of these in the town.
Whoa.
And there has indeed been an inquiry here in Carborough about the
possibility. There's several of them in Durham if you're interested there.
Interested.
Well, that's
great.
Reason
thank
enough.
You.
Okay.
All right, so you get where
question
we're headed.
Question answered, yes. Thank you.
Is that the court, it was a county level court, I mean, a district.
There have been a couple of lawsuits, Superior Court lawsuits, which effectively enjoined criminal prosecutions of these places as gambling because the court has found that they are not, in fact, gambling. What they have done, it's really, actually, you know, it borders on genius what they've done, the way that they're
evil genius.
The way that the operation works, but they've, the exemption that they found is the same exemption that from gambling that exists with respect to Hardee's and other places that have these so-called sweepstakes where you go in and you buy something and you, at the time that you buy, you have won or you've not won, and you just simply take the cap off to learn whether you've won or not won, or open your French fries or whatever it is that you do. The approach that they're doing is that you're buying computer time, and when you buy this computer time, you have, by that action alone, you have won or not won. But then they've divided, what's the genius about it is they've got this, you play these games that will reveal to you over a period of time what you've won, and you have the feeling like you're playing a game and either winning or losing as you're playing the game. But you've already, at the time that you hand them your money for the computer time that you purchased, you have either won or you haven't won, just like when you, you know, go into 7-Eleven and buy a soft drink and open the cap. You've either won or you haven't won where you paid it. So it's not gambling. It's not, you know, it's, but people just flock in there to do this and play these games, and apparently it's, like I said, the computer aspect of it is what sort of borders on genius and how they figured out how to do this and the psychology of it, because people will play this game for, play the games for hours, even though all they have to do is, and the signs are up, all you have to do is say, pay my money, how about, what have I won, give me my winnings, I'll go home. They don't do that. They sit down and they play these games because the games reveal to them over a period of time what you've won based upon...
Or lost.
Or lost, yeah. Yeah, or not won. Wow. But so it's it's all psychology and computer. It's really...
Scary.
When I finally
genius.
Figured out what was going on, it's fascinating. Wow. It's not illegal.
It's addictive.
Now, what Steve was saying with the General Assembly is apparently trying to address this, but it's a cat and mouse game. You know, they pass one statute and then they switch. They do something else.
Wow,
that's interesting.
So I will move right. Item 4.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thanks, Mike.
Opposed. Matter passed unanimously. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, I mean, I hate to belabor the point, but genuinely, it's an interesting update on what's going on in the world. All right. We are on item D1, receipt of Tree City USA.
The town of Carver has been named Tree City USA for 2009 by the National Arbor Day Foundation to honor its commitment to its community forest. Student winners of the poster contest have been invited to attend the meeting and be recognized by the town. And if you noticed on the bulletin board as you came in on the left, the winning posters are up out there and have been for a week or so, George.
Mm-hmm. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening,
George.
On behalf of the Public Works Department, I appreciate you reading the National Public Works Week proclamation, and I'll take it home with me to keep it safe tonight.
You have to share it with Eleanor.
Briefly wanted to do two things with the Tree City USA presentation. Go through the events that we had this year, and we have two poster honorees who are present tonight, and we want to honor them. Recognize them as well. Carbo's been named Tree City USA for the year 2009, and shows the town's commitment. In order to do this, we need to meet four standards with the National Arbor Day Foundation. We have a tree board, second standard, a community tree ordinance, the third, a community forestry program, and the fourth is to have an Arbor Day observance and proclamation. And this year's event took place again at Carver Elementary School. The mayor was present, presented the flag by the state forester. Students competed in a poster contest, and we had a planting of a redbud tree. And we have some photos here. Here is the flag being presented to the mayor.
That's me on the right.
We can tell. Where's the hat?
Here we're having a reading of the proclamation. Students helping with the reading of the proclamation. I believe that's this is the mayor on the left again, and Emily Bivens, the principal. Here we have the planting of the redbud tree out in the circle area. We had a lot of energetic students with gold shovels.
Gold. Oh. I should sell that.
And Smokey was present again this year. Provided encouragement during the planting and high-fiving. And here we have the state forester and the crews that helped from landscaping grounds.
I hope that picture's going to be framed in Public Works.
And here are our poster contest honorees.
All right.
Before I bring up the two honorees that are here tonight, I want to make sure I thank everybody. The mayor for coming and participating in the event, Carbury Elementary School Principal Emily Bivens, and I believe third grade teacher Eileen Regan, the State Forestry Service, Public Works employees David Poitras, Lakeisha White Kelly, Carolyn Russell, Kelly Blair, Bobby Horton, and Officer Kenny Stewart, who played Smokey for us this year. All right, I will read all of the names, and honorable mention went to third grader Ethese. Ethese is not here tonight. Third place, Maria Banda Arisa. Maria, would you come up, please? And bring your poster. Do you have your poster? And if you stand here with the mayor and turn around, folks can probably see it at home.
Oh, nice. They help you breathe.
Trees are terrific because they help you breathe. They give you, I'm reading it upside down, I'm sorry. They give you oxygen and other things.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Thank you, Mayor. Second place was Hannah Letterer, also a third grader. And first place was Sarah Warner, a third grader. And Sarah's here tonight. Sarah, come on up, please.
Trees are terrific and energy wise too. Trees help us breathe. If we do not have them, well, I don't know. I don't want to think about that. Let's just be grateful that we have them now.
Nice.
Excellent. All right. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. We have a little present for you. That's
thank you very much. Students for coming. We greatly appreciate it.
Thanks, George.
Thank you for participating.
All right. I got to tell you, that is one of the two most enjoyable parts of being mayor of Carborough, along with our holiday parade. All right. We're on the presentation of the Human Services Commission recommendations, Mr. Manager.
Could you all consider adopting the resolution accepting the award?
Yes.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded that we
accept the award.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. Welcome, Audrey.
I don't think it reaches up high enough. Well, you have a copy, I believe, of what the Human Services Advisory Board has, the conclusions we have come to, and we have spent every last penny that you gave us to spend. We tried to hold the line as much as we could with our organizations that have been doing such a good job for so many years, as well as give some initial support to some newer organizations that are doing some really exciting grassroots addressing of the needs in the community. Mm-hmm. Just about everybody is reporting decrease in funds for any number of reasons. Mm-hmm. So we had a request for almost $250 million, and we gave out about $144,000, which was what our allotment was.
All right. Are there any?
Thank you. This looks great.
Questions for Audrey? All right.
I have one question. The there's one new item, which is the RENA program.
Right.
And it says expansion of annual back-to-school backpack distribution.
Mm-hmm.
And can you tell us any more about that? Just so we
well, about the organization?
No, I know what the organization
is. Oh, right,
what the project is.
Well, they provide backpacks for the students, not just in the area, but in the surrounding areas. and I believe as well they are offering a summer program for the children in the area.
Great,
very impressive.
Okay.
Boomerang. The decision with Boomerang, was this the first time Boomerang had applied?
No, they've applied in the past, and our thought was a lot of what they offered was being offered in other areas, perhaps was being covered already. So we decided, since we can't give everybody what they ask for, that we'd stay with what was already working.
Okay. Thank you.
I know the Freedom House Recovery Center seemed mm-hmm. to have a kind of a very specific amount that was awarded. They asked for seven. I mean, they got seven last year, asked for eight. They got 7861. Was that a certain bill they had or something?
No. Actually, what it was, we wanted to give them we had come with amount, and then we wanted to see if we could give them a little bit more. And that, I believe it was $861 or whatever, was what was left over after we gave everybody else. So we decided to give it to Freedom House.
Okay. Any other questions?
Sure. Move the resolution.
Second.
All right. The resolution's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed? Matter passed unanimously. We know it's a tough job to listen to and sort through, you know, a lot of worthy causes and select out the right way for us to go as a town. We sincerely appreciate it.
It can be frustrating because we want to give everybody what they need, but it's also very heartening to see all the people that are out there working so hard. It's a great place.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Mr. Manager, D3, discussion of water and sewer management planning and boundary agreement.
Yes, you all had invited a representative of the Eflin Mebane Small Area Plan Implementation Focus Group to come back and talk about proposed changes to the Water and Sewer Management Planning and Boundary Agreement. And I think Pete Hallenbeck is here, and also Perdita Holtz with Orange County Planning staff, and Trish is pulling up a PowerPoint. And then they'll come up and share some additional information with the board.
Good evening. I'm Perdita Holtz with Orange County's Planning Department, and you'll recall I was here back on April 6th discussing this item. And at that time, you approved the proposed changes in the Hillsborough area, and you asked for additional information on the county proposed changes that would further implement the adopted Eflin Mebane Small Area Plan. Specifically, you asked for a member of the group that put together the plan to come and speak with you. And so Mr. Pete Hallenbeck is here this evening for that purpose. He's an Eflin resident who served on the original planning committee that came up with the plan, and he also serves on the ongoing implementation focus group. So he's here to hopefully answer all your questions, especially about the Bowman Road area.
Thank you, Pete. Okay, thank you.
Thanks Hello. For coming.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
As Perdita said, I live in Eflin. I've been involved in the Eflin Small Area Plan in its first phase, which was sort of let's get a bunch of residents in and see what they're thinking. A second phase where those thoughts were taken and turned into more concrete suggestions. And we've just started the third phase where we try to figure out how to take those suggestions and make workable ordinances so that things can happen up there. If you would like, I can pass on some of the key thoughts that came out of the Eflin Small Area Plan that would apply to both the area and the questions you have on the Bowman Road. Okay?
That'd be great.
Something that came up early on in the Small Area Plan is the citizens of Eflin said that Eflin used to have a bank, it used to have stores, it used to have businesses, and now the citizens have to go somewhere else for just about all the services. And the citizens also wanted a better balance of commercial and residential as far as a tax base in the county. And you hear that everywhere in the county, you also hear it in Eflin. There's also some hope that more commercial activity in the area would be more places for jobs, both entry-level and professional. And finally, more commercial in the area means smaller commutes. Eflin is turning into a bedroom community, and so everybody gets up, leaves Eflin, goes somewhere else, goes to work, and comes back every day. Mm-hmm. The Bowman Road area is planned to have water and sewer, and so it seemed like a good place to have mixed use. And it complements the economic development district, because between the two, you get this ability to have lots from 1 to 60 acres with everything from maybe a small a heating and cooling company to a fairly large plant that can do things. So it's a very wide range of businesses that you could have between the mixed use and the economic development district. Cheeks Township has seen a huge growth in residential, a lot of homes. And the reason for that is it's a cheap place to build and buy a home. I'm also on the Eflin Fire Department, and we have 7 firefighters that volunteer at Eflin but actually work in municipal departments in Orange County. They're living up in Eflin because it's cheaper to live there than it is to live where they work. So we have a lot of people in Eflin that live in Eflin, go somewhere else to do everything. It is turning into a bedroom community, and it would be really nice to have those extra businesses, get rid of this driving, so forth. And finally, one of the things that came out of the plan is a desire to capitalize on the interstate. It's there, it's big, it's loud, it's noisy. That's where you want to put things. And so the idea is between the interstate, the railroad corridor, the economic development zone, and the existing Eflin area along US 70, that's where you want to have these businesses and residential. There was definitely a desire to control that growth. Nobody wants to live next to a plant. You need to pick out areas and say, here's what we're going to do here. And the corridor has some very interesting things available when you look at the big picture. You basically can have anywhere from 1 to 60 acres for things, and that's what businesses need. And the thinking was it's kind of hard to start a business up for an awful lot of businesses that might need 10 to 75 acres down here in Carrboro and Chapel Hill, but it's very possible up in the Eflin area. Mm-hmm. So those were the sorts of thoughts that that everyone had, a mix of better tax base, more things locally in terms of services, more businesses locally in terms of jobs, and this concept of having it in a area and saying, here's where we're going to have it. And one thing that strikes me when I look at the maps and when I drive in the area is there's going to be a very sharp gradient between here we are, here's businesses, and rural area. And that is a mix of water and sewer availability and the zoning work that's going on right now. So there's an encapsulation of what a lot of the citizens said they wanted, what their concerns were, and how Bowman Road fits into that plan.
I've been hearing information about Reverend Reverend from Rogers Road.
Campbell.
Reverend Campbell has been engaged with citizens up in Eflin. Apparently there's issues with utility costs. How are you aware of any of these issues in Eflin?
When you say utility costs,
apparently there have been some
water and sewer.
Water and sewer,
okay.
Specifically, there have been some capital improvements that are requiring a raise in the cost for people who live around there.
I think I know what you're referring to. The Eflin area is kind of interesting because when you drive through it, when you think about it, when you see the small area plan, it behaves like a town, but it's not incorporated. So the water is supplied by Orange Alamance, which is a private company, with tie lines to Hillsborough and to Mebane, so everything's backed up and so forth. The sewer, in some areas, goes to a pump station and goes to Hillsborough, and in other areas, it goes to a pump station and goes to Mebane. And one of the things that's going on with the sewer is the county has basically been in the sewer business for the Eflin area, and it's been subsidizing the cost of that sewer. And so the cost hasn't changed in a long time. And so one of the things that's being discussed is having the residents pay what it costs to process the sewer. And I believe that would mean that the monthly rate could go from a $25 or $30 a month up to as much as a $75 or $80 a month if you reflected those actual costs. And some of these increases are dependent on how many people you have on the system. When the sewer goes in, how many people will sign up, the growth that you have, and it's sort of a game of economy of numbers or economy of scale. If enough people sign up, obviously a great deal of the sewer costs are fixed and that price could come down. With the number of people that are currently on the sewer system, if you were to turn around today and say, okay, you're going to actually pay what it costs, then you get the price increases. So I think that's what the concern is, and I don't know many more details as far as what the county's plans are. The only other thing I'm aware of is I think the Hillsborough sewer plant is undergoing some renovation and upgrades, and so there's a lot of talks about how to accommodate that and share the cost for that. And of course, all that ties into all these matters we're talking about with growth and businesses, because if you're planning for businesses, if you're going to have the EDD, if you're going to have a mixed-use area, if you're going to help the current citizens in Eflin that are having failing septic tanks, all those numbers going in to figure out how much capacity you need. And I'm sure it's very frustrating for the citizens because nobody can give them the number right now because a lot of that is still in the planning stages.
And so those are costs that have increased for the citizens of Eflin, not necessarily for Mebane or Hillsborough, probably specifically because there's been an improvement to the system in Eflin. Is that correct?
Basically, in Eflin, the sewage that goes to Hillsborough, there are two pumping stations. One of them serves the school, Eflin Cheek School, and the citizens in that area. And another one was put in a Habitat for Humanity community called Richmond Hills. And so those are the two pump stations right now. And there's a planned sewer system improvement for the whole area to help everyone that has failing septic systems and also to try to plan for business. So all those go into play, and I really don't know right now what the plan is and when those increases will happen. But I think quite correctly, the citizens have been told, we've got this looming problem, what are we going to do? And I think the county also quite correctly is saying it's probably not fair to have all the taxpayers in the county subsidize the small group to that extent.
Yeah, I guess my main concern is if it's an improvement in the system in part to incentivize businesses, and I don't know if it's even related to Buckhorn or if that's too far away from Eflin, that the citizens that are bearing the cost of it now, are, you know, before those businesses are there, are essentially subsidizing the future businesses that could be there.
I know for the Bowman Road area, that will be on the Mebane system. And so it would not be subject to those concerns. And what I don't know is I don't have a direct answer for that question. I know there were a lot of bonds that were passed, and there are federal grants that are involved. And I know within the small area plan, one of the reasons for wanting business was to help to pay for the infrastructure improvements. For example, that Mebane basically is not in the business of putting in water and sewer and then hoping that businesses will show up. They tend to have the business pay to put in the infrastructure, and then they take it over. The same models have been discussed in Eflin. There's an area of residential where people are having the septic problems where sewer's going in. There are other areas down by the interstate which would require lift stations, and the plan is that the businesses would pay for that, and they would be sized for both business and residential, so the businesses could bear the cost of those improvements. Those are the ones that would be going to Hillsborough.
Peter, the Buckhorn area, that parcel, the Economic Development District, Orange County is going to be putting water and sewer or is looking to plan to do that. Does any of that include the Bowman Road area? I'm not really clear on how far down that connection will go.
I'll give you my understanding on that, and Perdia, jump in if I make a mistake here. What's in place now is from Buckhorn Road east to Gravely Middle School in the soccer field area. There's water and sewer that was put in and belongs to and is serviced by Mebane. So in essence, the southern half of that economic development district below the interstate already has water and sewer.
Okay.
There's a matching half north of the interstate, and it basically doesn't have water and sewer, but it's planning to go in. There's not a plan for it right now because obviously the whole southern section is available. I shouldn't say there isn't a plan. There isn't a schedule for it because the southern section is available. Mm-hmm. And that will also most likely be with Mebane. The Bowman Road area right now does not have a gravity drain sewer going in. But when a lift station was put in for the Collington Hills subdivision, is Collington Hills or Farm? Collington Farm subdivision, just across the line in Alamance County, that lift station was sized for that entire area, anticipating the mixed use. And this is just a result of, during the Eflin Small Area Plan, we were lucky enough to have officials from Mebane attend the meetings so that everyone could help see what's going on, plan for infrastructure, and so forth.
For the Orange County Economic Development District, I don't know what the schedule is either, but when that the sewer and water goes in there, the Orange County is going to put that in, and then Mebane takes it over. Am I correct?
That's correct, and that's happened on the south side.
And it'll go to that lift station?
It goes to a lift station at the Petro Mart, which is near Buckhorn Road.
Okay, so it doesn't go across that Bowman track.
It doesn't go across the track, no.
It's supposed to go to the Bowman Road area. The lift station that's at the Petro is insufficient. It has problems now, and they want to redesign the system to go along or through that Bowman Road area to the regional lift station that's located off of whatever Bowman Road turns into. Excuse me, when you enter Alamance County, there's a regional lift station.
You don't happen to have, with the slides, one of the maps of utility? Because back April 6th, we had those are the maps. Do you have, there was one that was even more specific.
We'll get that in just one second here. First off, this map is interesting because it's the big picture. It shows you this concept of a core area, that sharp gradient into rural, working along the interstate. And the red blob here is the Bowman Road area that you're concerned about. Mm-hmm. So that gives you, just from a county size view, the perspective. And this is something a lot of the people in the Eflin area liked, is that sharp gradient, the here's businesses, let's keep it rural everywhere else.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Is this the most applicable one? One more.
One more still.
Yeah.
Okay. There it is.
That's a utility one.
It's the I-85, 4085 going through here, Buckhorn Road, the Petro, West 10, the school, the soccer fields. This is the area that already has water and sewer. This is the Bowman Road area. This is the area in the EDD, Economic Development District to the north, that doesn't have water and sewer.
That's 2A, correct?
Correct, 2A.
Do you happen to know offhand 1A and 1B, what the combined footprint of that area is? How many acres?
The EDD south of the interstate is like 646.
Mm-hmm. And the entire EDD is 960.
Oh, 960 includes
960 for all the lavender shaded areas.
And Bowman Road area is 440 acres.
Uh-huh. And where's the rail corridor on there?
Let's see, Washington Street 70.
70.
Saunders. It's going to go right here.
Kind of halfway between.
In 70. Between 70 and Washington Street, so north of the interstate. Down to town here, across it right there. So this northern section here will have access to the rail.
Mm-hmm.
But you can see this concept of the mixed businesses. These are going to be big operations, big plants.
Right.
You're not going to have someone coming in for their plumbing company service. You're not going to have someone with a cleaning service. You're not going to have a repair service coming in. That might be in the mixed use. The mixed use could end up with areas that might be retail. You'll have the residential. It's a lot quicker for everyone to drive in there, do things.
And this is this business where you can have, you know, 1 to 100 acres available for businesses in the corridor. And then this sharp gradient. In fact, if you go out there today and you go in here and you see the school and you come from the Petro, as soon as you get below West 10, they're fields. I mean, they're just huge farm fields there. And when you go north, US 70, and you come up Eflin Cedar Grove Road, McAdams Farms is here. There's big open fields here. It's just open in big areas. It's a very sharp area. It's defined there.
I'm not sure how this drawing dovetails with your small area plan, but do you have plans for mixed use close to the track, close to the rail? You know, residential and smaller commercial.
There's an area called the Effluent Core, which is right in here. And in fact, in here is where the railway station in Effluent used to be. And this is the area that's going to be getting a sewer to help out people that are living there in their houses and then having failing septic systems. And part of the plan is to encourage more businesses in this area. Mm-hmm. And the other thing that came out of the plan was a concept similar to Hillsborough, where basically if you're north of the railroad tracks, everybody wanted to preserve the character of the community. If you're south of the railroad tracks, you're up against the interstate. You know, okay, if it takes some kind of formula restaurant there to have entry-level jobs for high school kids, that's great. North of the railroad, let's preserve the area. That's where you may want to have an owner that has a restaurant or business, unique character, had the buildings fit in with what we have. So there is this existing area set up for that, close to the railroad tracks. And if you look at the commute traffic, just about everything funnels down from all these areas here down Eflin Cedar Grove through this area. That's where most people get on the interstate.
Pete, I didn't see the Hillsborough plan for rail. Is there any discussion of the Eflin Core for a rail stop in the future?
The only discussions that happened in the small area plan were people discussing that we had it, there's room for it, and in fact, if you come up Mount Willing Road, the area all along the railroad tracks, there's probably a 600 to 800 foot area there owned by the railroad. There used to be some grain elevators there, they're gone, and those areas could be used for a station.
Uh-huh. Where are those dotted yellow in the keys? Kind of, I mean, they're like lines, dashes, and it's hard to tell what.
These maps are
all the hatches and cross hatches.
Is that the 20-year transition?
Is that rural residential?
Commercial watershed, same color.
The yellow is 20-year transition area, and the orange is 10-year transition area, and the Eflin Small Area Plan actually proposes to change the label to just transition area or urbanizing area, something along those lines. Because it's been 10-year transition area for about 30 years now.
Is there any movement in Eflin to incorporate?
There's been talk from time to time. I think with the changes that occurred a couple years ago in the legislature, the general consensus is it would be very difficult to incorporate.
That's too bad.
Well, one other thing that's hidden by this map is there's a creek here called McGowan Creek, and that is sort of giving you these boundaries between these two areas. And in general, it's been assumed that it would be a major change for Eflin to have water and sewer north of that creek. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're having to put in lift stations. You're having to have lift stations that are pumping, you know, sewer under pressure across the creek, all those concerns. But I think everyone has also realized that if you look at Eflin in the last 50 years, and of course that's just me talking to residents there, nobody would have guessed it would have turned into the bedroom community it is today. Mm-hmm. So the goal is to say, okay, where can we draw a line that everyone can agree on? And that's what this yellow area is. This is as far as everyone's willing to let it go, and then we really want to keep the farmland, we want to keep it rural.
I am afraid that it is more or less my fault that at some level that we're having this discussion, because I was the one who particularly raised some issues about the Bowman Road area. And You know, I want to say first, thank you very much for coming tonight and presenting on this plan. I think it's not just the way I would have done it, but I think you've taken into account and lots of important information in coming up with a plan, and it mostly seems like a, you know, forward-thinking plan for the area. But I had a specific concern about that area down near Bowman Road, and I appreciate that, you know, there's some, I'm interested to hear maybe just a little bit more about the sewer line issue and what role having that Bowman Road area be mixed use plays in achieving some of our other goals for our economic development districts. I think I understand the county staff to have indicated that there's a connection there. However, and you'll have to pardon me because when I addressed this issue the last two times I addressed this issue, I don't think I had my thoughts all that well organized, and I spent some time today trying to distill it down to something relatively short. But what I want to share is that particular area of Orange County has played a very important role in the history of our community, of our whole county. I had written something very lengthy, and I tried to edit it down, and I hope I can ask the board's indulgence to read this to you. In 1701, an English explorer by the name of John Lawson rode on horseback across the land that we're discussing tonight along Bowman Road. He wrote of this in his book, A New Voyage to Carolina, and here's what he said. "Here is plenty of good timber, and especially of a scaly-barked oak, and as there is stone enough in both rivers, and the land is extraordinarily rich, no man that will be content within the bounds of reason can have any grounds to dislike it." We know for a fact that Lawson crossed this land because he followed the native trading path, or the Indian trading path, as it used to be called, which we now call Bowman Road, Hillsborough Road, and old NC-10, right through this area. Although the Sisapaha people once heavily populated the area between the Haw River and the Eno watershed, it's unclear how many Native Americans lived in that area, the Haw Old Fields, as it was known, in 1728, when these lands were first granted to Europeans. A major smallpox epidemic had ravaged the Native American population of the Piedmont of North Carolina in the 1720s. There are no real specific records that show us how it might have impacted the Sisapaha people in the Old Fields. A group of prominent North Carolinians who were assigned to survey the boundary between North Carolina and Virginia in 1728 abandoned the tail end of their responsibilities and instead came south through what later became Orange County, and surveyed off the juiciest agricultural lands in Orange County, this area, the Haw Old Fields, including the area that we're discussing tonight right there on Bowman Road. Upon returning to English civilization in eastern North Carolina, these men and prominent allies of theirs purchased the Haw Fields from the King of England, purchased, in quotation marks. Amongst them, they took nominal title to some 50,000 acres, almost 80 square miles, including all of what is now Eflin, Mebane, Haw River, Green Level, Haw Fields, Swepsonville, Saxpaw, Oaks, and White Cross. Later, these land titles changed hands several times, but about 60% of the whole area, 30,000 acres, ultimately wound up being inherited by a Scottish merchant by the name of Samuel Strudwick. Now, Samuel Strudwick came to North Carolina in 1764, about 10 years after he'd inherited these properties, and discovered that all sorts of folks were already living on his Haw Field tracts, and had been there for nearly 20 years. These were the first Europeans who settled this area. Almost, excuse me, I haven't had much of a chance to practice on this. Almost all of these folks were Scottish families who had arrived from Pennsylvania via the Great Wagon Road. Finding the Haw Fields in possession of these intruders, as he called them, Strudwick at first negotiated lease terms with some of them,
However, just as the regulators began to stand up to the Orange County courts in 1768, so Strudwick's tenants began to stand up to him at the same time. And thus began a 20-year-long legal battle over the title to these 30,000 acres in what is now Orange and Alamance counties. Strudwick moved to Orange County around 1770 from the coast in order to prosecute his land claims, and he occupied an existing farm that had been abandoned by a man named William Craig. William Craig abandoned that farm to move to over here and found New Hope Chapel over on New Hope Creek. And the Craig family that you know from all in this area is that same one. Anyway, on Craig's former farm, Strudwick erected his mansion and named it Winnendale. Winnendale fundamentally still stands on Ben Wilson Road, right in the northwest corner of Area 6B, the Bowman Road subject area, squarely within the area under consideration for mixed-use development. But beyond Winnendale, Strudwick had little control over his, quote-unquote, 30,000 acres. In 1780, he petitioned for tax relief on the grounds that he did not control most of the lands that were titled in his name. Quote, the survey of these lands, though authorized by the Superior Court, has been frustrated by the violent opposition of sundry persons who have seated themselves thereon, and since the revolution in government have entered and patented all that were of any value, not excepting my house and the plantation whereon I live. Strudwick wrote of one of his neighbors, on Saturday, when Bowles, James Bowles, who has got a new patent for a small plantation lying inside of my house, where there is an orchard and some corn planted, came and told me he intended in a few days to fetch away the peaches to distill. On my saying I would not consent to it, he answered he could get a posse to assist him, which I suppose he will, and it is very probable the other man who's got a patent for my house will raise another or the same posse and drive us into the woods. You may be assured I shall not suffer either to execute their designs while I'm able to resist them, but they so greatly outnumber all the strength I can muster that resistance on my part must prove ineffectual. At the April 1784 term of Orange County Superior Court, Samuel Strudwick finally won his first ejectment case, a mere 30 years after he had inherited the deed to these 30,000 acres. Richard Gott, who lost that case, either began renting or moved off the farm he'd been on for 20 years, and thus began a cascade of judgments in favor of Samuel Strudwick. Although surviving court records are fragmentary, it appears that Strudwick won almost all of his lawsuits, forcing hundreds of Orange County families to pay Strudwick for the farms that they had created largely with their own hands. Herbert S. Turner relates in his book, Church in the Old Fields, quote, Addison Wilson's son, Henry, now owns the old Strudwick place. The very old trees in the yard may well date back to those early days. It was about 300 yards from that site that the first Hawfields Church was built, and the cemetery where many of the early settlers were buried was located. Strudwick's home place, Winnendale, was immediately adjacent to the rude log building that was the house of worship for the Scottish Presbyterian settlers. It was called the Hawfields Meeting House, or later Hawfields Presbyterian Church. The conflict with Strudwick cast doubt on the church's title to the land, and so the growing congregation abandoned the original church site. Hawfields Presbyterian Church moved in 1771 to a major intersection on the native trading path 2 miles to the west. But the original church site and its unmarked and undocumented graveyard are 1/5 of a mile east of Ben Wilson Road on just that same piece of land shown as mixed-use development on the plan. I'm sorry for this lengthy history lesson, which at least is at an end here. But the point that I'm trying to make is that there are some important historic sites within that Area 6B that you show there. And Area 6A, just on the west side of Ben Wilson Road, an area that was already slated, I guess, to have sewer service and has by now already been, I believe, annexed by the city of Mebane, has been turned into this, remarkably remarkably unthoughtful, to my way of thinking, type of development in the form of Collington Farms. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is this. When Samuel Strudwick wrote in his letter about the conflict that he had with James Bowles over his peach orchard that was inside of his house, where he was talking about is the so-called Collington Farms. Mm. There was no Collington Farm. No one named Collington ever lived in that area unless it was in the last 50 years or so. That's just some name that Syntex invented for their development. You know, I guess it just concerns me that this is this the whole area, the whole region there, is an important part of Orange County's landscape. And there are some, I think, very prominent aspects of Orange County's historical landscape in particular. They're a part of Area 6B. And when I see that slated to be mixed-use development with no, you know, with nothing more, and looking at what is immediately adjacent and has been approved in the past by the City Council of the City of Mebane, it just makes me feel uncomfortable that there will be any. This makes me concerned about whether whether I'm being asked to sort of sign off on somebody's future obliteration of an important part of our historical landscape. That's what I'm trying to say.
So are you suggesting that we should perhaps see some safeguards for some of those sites and some of the history of the area before we approve this? Or
I guess all I'm saying is I don't feel like I can vote for it without hearing that somebody in Mebane hears what I'm saying.
And somebody perhaps on the county commission, the Orange County Commission.
How well known is what Mark is sharing with not only Orange County Planning, but folks in Mebane? How aware are they of it? I mean, this is the first I've heard of this, so.
Let me make this comment. One of the gentlemen that was in the Eflin Small Area Plan, happens to be my next-door neighbor, spent a great deal of time working to identify historical sites throughout Eflin. And during the course of the plan, he mentioned many of those sites, many of those buildings. Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's discussion in the plan about how to clean up roads, if you will, where there's big traffic problems. And he was very good about pointing out, well, we can't take the road through there. There's a house there that's right out of the 30s, and it's just classic architecture. And I don't know the exact details of it, but he spoke of mechanisms for registering homes and being historic and designating them. So I think within the Eflin Small Area Plan, you would find very sympathetic ears to preserving the history of the area. And there are people who have equal concerns about just having an area that gets bulldozed and turns into a United States of generica Syntex mess. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that everyone liked about the Eflin area, and if you've driven through there on 70, you can see this, is that everyone liked the fact that it was sort of this bizarre, eclectic mix of stuff that just happened but somehow hangs together. Mm-hmm. And one of the concerns people had was, with water and sewer, is this going to start turning into cookie-cutter housing developments, and how do you avoid that? And those are some of the things being addressed now as we do some of the ordinances. So I think the concerns you have with the history are valid. I think you'll find within the Eflin area a sympathetic ear to it. And certainly with the 440 acres there, it sounds like you could set aside a great deal of that and preserve some of that, and I don't think it would impact the area one bit. Now, the area I can't speak to is the ability of Mebane to annex into different areas and how all that would work and how you would do that on planning. So my gut feel of that is what I can relate to you in terms of why I'm here tonight, the capacity I'm here tonight, is there were discussions about the area. And there were many stories about, you know, there were gold mines in the area, there were silver mines in the area where the old roads were, where the railway station was. How do you preserve that? There's some wonderful houses throughout Eflin that just, you know, how can we save those? Can we designate them? We don't want someone to come in, buy that house, tear it down, and put something else up. So I think there's a sympathetic ear for all that. My personal opinion is I think your concerns could be met by setting aside part of that area for the history. I don't see anyone in the area having a problem with that. The part I can't help you with or address is what would Mevin do? What are their actions on it? How are they going to do things?
Well, I can address that portion just a little bit, if I'm allowed.
Yes? Come on up to the mic. Come up to the microphone, though, so people at home can hear you.
Orange County and Mevin have spoken over the years about a variety of planning issues and doing more collaborative planning. You should know that the Area 6A was annexed prior to these types of collaborative planning discussions, and Collington Farms was developed under the City of Mebane's development regulations. Our current utility service agreement with Mebane, which would be expanded to include these other areas, requires that development occur under Orange County guidelines and regulations and then is annexed by the City of Mebane. And I think that you're probably aware that Orange County has much more context-sensitive regulations than Mebane does. And so, you know, certainly mixed-use area guidelines and regulations could be written to have the context-sensitive aspects that you're looking for.
Let's just go back to what you just said for 1 second about being annexed by the City of Mebane. So what, other than 6A, which is already annexed by Mebane, correct? So that means 6B
is currently in Orange County.
Is in Orange. The 1s, the 2s, the 3, and the 5B are Orange?
5B is the Petro Station, which is Mebane satellite annexation.
Okay, so the 1s, the 2s, and the 3s are Orange. Would they also be annexed by Mebane?
They will eventually once they're developed.
So that means they'll go to the Mebane tax rolls?
Well, Orange County property taxes still apply, and then the City of Mebane tax on whatever their tax rate is as well. Okay. So the citizens of Orange County still benefit from the development.
But has there ever been any discussion within Orange County of it possibly being advantageous from the county standpoint for Eflin to incorporate and be able to annex some of these areas into Eflin and stay, you know, fully within Orange County jurisdiction?
I think that there has been, but it's been several years since any of those types of discussions have taken place. My understanding is that one of the reasons the city of or Eflin area does not want to incorporate is because people don't want to pay the city taxes or town taxes that would result as part of that incorporation.
That's what
because you'd still be paying county taxes, plus you'd have whatever town taxes tax rate was.
Because it really sounds like there's a lot of, you know, very thoughtful planning going on within the Eflin community.
You
could be advantageous expanding into some of these other areas, you know, along the lines of the concerns the mayor is raising.
Right. And I think you know that in North Carolina, you know, annexation law really favors municipal governments over counties. And so
For the moment.
And also made it more difficult to incorporate. But certainly there are fairly regular discussions that take place with the City of Mebane, and you know, two of their city council people were on the Eflin Mebane small area plan. One of them was a planning board rep at the time, and the other was a city council rep. And so certainly there's, you know, some sensitivity to the area. We all know political winds can change. And so, but when we, if we're able to amend our utility service agreement to say these areas will eventually be served by Mebane, but they're going to be developed under Orange County guidelines or Orange County regulations, and then annexed.
Okay,
you know,
but
it provides more protection.
So help me out. What aspect of it ensures that will happen?
We have a written agreement with Mebane to service certain areas, 1A, 1B, 2A, and 3, and we would expand that agreement to include 6B.
And so the 2A and 1A are expected to be annexed by Mebane?
Eventually.
And those are part of the EDD?
Yes.
All of that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how much of the EDD would ultimately be annexed by Mebane?
Probably all of it.
Yeah.
Eventually.
So,
And they know that.
So we're gonna, the county's providing these utilities to the, to them, and then they'll be annexed, or it's Mebane's, Mebane's.
It's Mebane's system, and, you know, right now the utilities only serve the school, and the county paid for that. There's probably, and everything is still being worked out, but there's going to be assessments made to other users, and people that want to tie on are going to have to contribute to the cost.
So this is related to the rising cost in Eflin if the county is paying for those expansions?
Not exactly. It's a separate system. The Eflin system is completely physically separate from the city of Mebane system.
But the county's paying for that?
The county subsidizes the Eflin system to the tune of about $100,000 per year.
But not the Buckhorn?
But okay. Well, the only user right now is the school, which is a government entity.
That's why they describe what happened here. The school had to go in.
Yeah, there are two schools in the area, Gravelly Hill Middle and Eflin Cheeks Elementary, which is in Eflin proper.
Mm-hmm. And this area also is the EDD the county wants to see development in. So the county ended up paying to put this in for the school. Devon takes it over, and then as businesses come in, that money comes back because the businesses pay their part of that infrastructure they're getting. And this is basically, I support this concept. The county's trying to solve the chicken and egg problem. What do you do when you have an EDD with no infrastructure? So the first business to come in goes, oh my gosh, I got to put in all that. No. I want to go. I need infrastructure. Right. Okay, great. We've got it now. So the citizens have a school with water and sewer. We have the water and sewer done by Mebane, which solves the problem that Eflin's not an incorporated area, doesn't have those facilities. This business has come in. The county gets money back because the businesses pay what would have been their share of that infrastructure.
Okay. As mayor, you know, I can't really make a motion, but I'd like to invite one at this point. Can I request that somebody on the board make a motion to
Well, Dan was working towards some language about safeguarding.
I'm not going to support this resolution if someone wants to move.
No, I have a specific suggestion, which is that we that the Board of Aldermen would resolve that we request the Board of County Commissioners to give some feedback on their intentions and commitment to preserving and protecting historic sites in within the areas that are contemplated for the county's development approval process.
And do we otherwise defer this?
That we request some comment from them, and that, you know, once the idea would be once we heard
and
back
then
from
defer
them,
defer consideration of the matter itself
until we heard that feedback. Yeah.
Okay. I'm happy to make that motion, but I want to be clear that I don't intend to vote for this in any case for other reasons. But we can take that up when it comes back.
Okay.
So you made the motion. Okay. Second.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Thank you. All right. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, matter passed unanimously. We'll look forward to hearing back from the commissioners. I'll try to forward.
Can we also get a little bit of information for the high cost nature of the services people in Eflin are getting? Just because it seems to be a concern.
Okay. The background there is the area that has sewer service right now is in this area. That's what goes to Hillsborough. So these are the people that are experiencing the problem the county has of how do we get out of the subsidizing the sewer business to introduce the rates. And then all the economy of scale falls back on both planning and how many people in this area that's getting sewer signed up.
Okay. Thanks.
Mark, I'd like to make a couple comments before we move on.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
One is, and this is kind of tangential to the matter itself, but it was asserted to us that the economic development in the Eflin area is important because a lot of people are living there who are commuting elsewhere. But I think this board is well aware that
the reason those people are living in Eflin is not because there aren't jobs in Eflin, but because there aren't homes where they work. And that's the same reason why when some of us were on the Leadership Advisory Council looking at the jobs being created by Carolina North, we didn't, there wasn't a solution in Carrboro for that. The solution was to say to UNC, you need to be able to build a whole lot of housing at Carolina North to affect that. So I just think it's important to bear that point in mind that, you know, if you have a place that's popular for commuters, adding businesses might increase the competition for housing, but it's not going to stop, and might therefore drive up the cost and make the commuters look elsewhere, but otherwise it's not going to make it less attractive to them. The more important point I need to make is it was good, important for me to get confirmation of what I've pretty well known all along, which is that EDD is slated for annexation by MEPIT. And I will not under any circumstances ever vote for this, because to me it's outrageous that 60% of the population of Orange County lives in Chapel Hill and Carrboro. 60% of the cost of the county's economic development office is paid for by those citizens. And I won't say that that office does nothing for us. It does some things from time to time. James is pretty good about trying to extract some support there when he can. But I want to know why the county doesn't have a area to be annexed by Carrboro where they're promoting economic development. I mean, is Mebane better than us? Does the county have more responsibility to Mebane than to us? I just think that's outrageous. It's a point I made as a citizen in 1994 to deaf ears on the county commissioner. Now I'm an alderman. I at least can cast a vote that will have an indirect impact on that, and I intend to do so. And it's part and parcel of the fact that so often the county commissioners and county government act as if the county starts where the Chapel Hill Carrboro line ends, and that is not the case, except at tax time. That's right, because we're paying those bills. And there's a lot of areas where this principle doesn't apply. Obviously, it doesn't apply to the county planning office. It doesn't apply to the sheriff's department to the same extent. But there's areas where it can and should apply, and economic development is one of them. And I want to see some initiative from the county to include our economic development office and us and Chapel Hill in this kind of planning, so that all the goodies aren't going to Mebane and Durham. You know, I'm happy that Hillsborough's got an EDD and that's helping their community economically there. But anyway, this is something that's been a concern of me for a long time, and so I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk about it a little bit.
I want to add to what Dan's saying. I'm on the Economic Development Commission for the county, and I've been doing this now, I don't know, 3 years. And one of the things I still cannot understand is why the economic development districts are they're along the I-85 corridors. They're at the complete opposite ends, and they're areas that are not contiguous to any urban center that forces, you know, new development or further development in those areas. In the case of the one on the western edge, you know, it forces a development and an annexation with Mebane to take control over it. On the eastern side, Durham. And to me, you know, Orange County definitely needs to be looking at a different mindset when it comes to economic development, because these plans are, you know, they're just not set up to fortify our urban centers. And this is where I completely agree with Dan. Two of our major parcels in and around Carrboro where Twin Creeks Park is and where Morris Grove Schools are taken off Carrboro's, you know, tax base. They're taken off our rolls. I mean, these were areas that could have been, you know, for commercial for Carrboro. And it makes it very difficult for Carrboro. And I think the Board of Commissioners really, they still don't understand the needs of our municipality.
Yeah, and let me just add that, you know, the way you solved that, what was referred to as a chicken and egg problem of getting services to these presumed EDDs is you put your EDDs where you can connect to services. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the commissioners in 1994, at that time I said, why don't you put an EDD in Northside? Mm-hmm. And this was before a green bridge was a twinkling in anyone's eye and before there was an upscale brewery plan for where Chapel Hill News is and where there was a real identified economic need, people who needed employment, the infrastructure, the transit, all that there. So anyway, I'm not going to belabor this anymore, but I thank you, Randy, for coming behind me on that.
Can I just add, I think it's also in a large part related to the county, perhaps seeing the county as, you know, increasing tax base anywhere in the county economic development zones would benefit people with Carrboro and Chapel Hill because it would offset some of that tax burden. But I think both Randy and Dan are making a valid point where we're moving towards a time where we need to have these economic developments where people actually are. And the county is not all bikeable, and we're a community that values being able to get to places without necessarily having to jump in a car. And so, in as much as we can encourage those jobs for people very close to where they live, you know, we're that much better off.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Are you kind of suggesting that the joint land use plan that's associated with the joint planning agreement needs to be revisited?
Are you talking to me?
The board in general, with the comments that you all made.
I'm suggesting the county needs to put some of its economic development focus into where the majority of its citizens live and the majority of its tax revenues are derived from.
I think one of the things that the Economic Development Commission is doing, and I think they're doing this tonight at the commissioners' meeting, is recommending, among other things, that some monies be put countywide to support local entrepreneurs, programs like that that will make a difference to citizens who are currently here, localizing the economy within the county. I think those are the kinds of things that we want to see change, and I think up until this point, that's not necessarily how the commissioners were looking at overall economic development. I think it was more, you know, attract that big business, bring them in, and, you know, incite them on a footprint or create destination retail. So I think that there's, you know, some exciting possibilities that have been recommended, but I think one of the messages we in Carrboro certainly want to give the commissioners is that, you know, they look at reinfusing support within the communities that are currently here. I think that's really something that has been lacking.
Okay. We've already voted on a motion that I think is predicated to any further action. So,
my future budget. So,
all right. I thank you for being clear about that. There are no other managers on our printed agenda. Are the board members?
I have one. And I don't usually stick my toe in this one, but what's going on with the county with the library? I know that Commissioner Jacobs has floated the idea, and it's just his idea, although I think it's a very good idea, of using the Skills Center for a library. But then I'm also hearing, I was at a couple of our local events on Friday and Saturday, and hearing that the county is cutting funds or proposing cutting funds again for library services to Carrboro, including cutting funds for the library. Have you heard about funds for the library getting cut? Or is that a rumor?
Well, I think everything is sort of rumor until the county manager presents his proposed budget is sort of the part of the problem that's swirling around, not only this issue, but many others in county government. I don't know what date that's anticipated.
I think it just came out today.
It's tonight. It is tonight.
I did read that the library and the Dougal School are going to be cutting hours and sharing times.
Again?
Under his proposal.
Right.
Well, then
under that proposal,
I think one thing we need to do maybe next week is respond strongly to that as a board and kind of defend what library we got left.
Well, okay. Well, I think that's fine. I think it bears pointing out that the county commissioners did request that the county manager bring them a no tax increase budget.
Yeah.
Which necessarily involves him putting forward some proposed cuts. So let's just remember through the whole discussion that the county manager's proposed budget is what our elected official asked him to bring them at some level. And, you know, I don't assume that the county commissioners are going to approve, in fact, a no tax increase budget, because I don't believe that's really possible without making some cuts that I doubt they're willing to make. However, the point is just to bear in mind that the county manager is doing what he's been requested to do,
exactly.
A, and B, maybe could I just suggest that we request the town staff to address at some point, perhaps in writing for us, concerns that the town staff has about potential impacts of the county manager's proposed budget on the town of Carrboro and residents of the town of Carrboro.
Not just the library, but other. I'm fully aware.
I get the sense that there may be a lot of cuts in his proposed budget.
I don't see
how it's possible otherwise.
I reminded the people who were talking to me about the library that the county's dealing with things like a twofold increase in the number of people receiving food stamps, cutting back funding to many of our nonprofits, having an increase in their share of Medicaid, having to freeze salaries or lay off people. And I realize that libraries may not be at the top of that list, but I think we could at least work to kind of hold our own. But
the problem is with the suggestion that the monies that were designated for potential Southwest Branch Library would be redirected. I think that's even a greater piece of the problem, so that even our hope for a future library is going to be further diminished by the fact that two revenue streams that could potentially have contributed to that are being redirected.
I think we need to be very careful there. I think that the commissioners are doing a really hard job.
Yes.
And I'm not about to jump on somebody for making a statement a year ago that a change in revenue stream and a change in this fiscal stress of the county has brought about. And
let me just suggest this, that rather than continuing the discussion about what the county manager's budget might be, let's discuss the issue at some future time of what his proposal actually is and the implications it holds for our town.
Mark, do you feel like you could personally follow up with the commissioners on the skill center idea, find out whether that's seriously on the table or, what
sure.
really the prospect is?
I think Barry's just floating it, but yeah, it'd be good to see
what
it's getting anywhere.
What does it get for something to be floating to flushed. To make a bad.
It's a new idea. Yeah.
All right. Well, I will do that. I'd be glad to do that.
Okay. So right. I'm going to make you all talk about the clerk position.
Okay. Did we have, before we do that, if you don't mind, real quick, wasn't there something you?
I had a question for a town attorney on the advisory boards.
Oh, but the Greenways Commission last night voted to request that this sent a request to this board for us to ask the town attorney to give some maybe some written perspective to the Greenways Commission, but more generally advisory boards in general. The issue that has come up is, I guess, in this training video that we had, the professor from the Institute of Government who does the training video has kind of put the fear of God into some people about the possibility of open meetings law violations that could result from email communications under some circumstances, or allegedly could result. And also has raised some significant concerns about whether what we're doing currently is adequate in terms of making email communications between and among advisory board members about town business adequately available to the public or to the press. So the question is, could you perhaps respond with some guidance about I mean, I think email communication plays a fairly essential role in a lot of the work that various advisory boards do. And what some people seem to have come away from the video with is the impression that, you know, I'm, as a Greenways Commission member, somehow I shouldn't be allowed to send an email to everyone on the Greenways Commission about a matter relating to Greenways.
Or what happens if the email list goes out to more than what would constitute a quorum?
That's what I'm saying. If in other words, there's a, you know, and anyway, I told the previous question
that
maybe your opinion was not exactly the same as what that professor had advocated.
That's probably accurate.
Well, can you not?
Yes, I can do that. In fact, I have done that previously. So I think I have a memo that addresses a number of those concerns, at least on the first part of those issues. The second part of the issue is I will take a look at what is, you know, there's such a gap between the theory and the reality that it's one of these extremely difficult situations because of, you know, whether something is a public document, you know, and under what circumstances it theoretically ought to be, you know, kept, but if everybody was using town computers and all this would be just fine and easy, but they're not, and it becomes extremely difficult.
Can you?
I mean, there's a real practical.
But you'll get a memo on that.
I will do a memo on it.
When, when you unearth the other memo or get this one out, new one out, can you also look at maybe clarifying, like the use of Google Docs?
If I knew what Google Docs was, it would be helpful.
Google Groups, you mean?
Google Groups, yeah.
Well, or like, shared documents.
Shared documents. Because some folks, you know, the difference between instantaneous.
Yeah, I can address that. That is addressed in the memo.
Okay.
In another context, I think.
Right. Okay.
And there was one other request, but I thought I was keeping that till the end.
Okay.
Till we finish business, so that's okay. So go ahead, Dan.
Okay. So someone can explain to me if there's a reason to feel cavalier about this, which everyone else seems to be except me. But when I get a memo that says town clerk position will be vacant on July 1st, to me that's like really soon. It means we need to like be getting off our tushes and getting a process in place.
Mm-hmm.
So I have three things. One is, Steve, you had said in response to my memo that you could tighten up this schedule and get the interviews like a week or a couple weeks earlier. Can we like assume that that's going to happen, or do we need to see a new schedule?
I think what we can do is, you had mentioned I think the end result is the final interviews by the board,
And what I'd said, that we could have those ready for you all for the last week in August. So that changes the schedule that you have from looking at September 7th through the 10th to like the 27th through the 31st of August.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's kind of 2 weeks old. I think that would be a big improvement.
Before we even get started on this, could we have those interviews be in non-work hour times? Because that's the week the university begins to open. And I think a lot of us, and I can count at least three of us, that school's opening,
is a problem.
Particularly the first couple weeks, we have a rough time getting away. So just let candidates know that these will be off-hour interviews. I'm particularly interested in making sure we work around Lydia's schedule, because sometimes it has some evening things. And
Not next year, thank goodness.
Oh, good. Okay.
So are you saying that the candidates can only come when all seven board members can be there?
No. But I think, you know, we haven't chosen or had volunteers yet for who's going to be helping with interviews, and I just think it needs to be.
But presumably we'll do that well in advance. So my other suggestion was going to be that we have an agenda item between now and the end of June, at which time we would do two things. And my suggestion is that we would have one board member who would advise staff on initial review of applications and on the point where here it says August 16th, which is review the results of the initial interview, so that there's some board participation. That my thinking is that any one of us is qualified to bring our perspective at that early stages, and then that we create a committee to do the actual, participate in the actual interviewing, and whether that's two people or three people, I don't have an opinion on that. We can figure out who that's going to be, and that by implication that'll address the scheduling, whatever the scheduling issues are.
I think it should be more than one person initially. I think with things like that, it should never just be one board member. And I do think that since the clerk reports and works directly for the board, that's a whole board decision. So there has to be a time when the whole board does meet the final candidates. It could be that a smaller group says, you know, these are our top two choices or our top three choices, and then the board interviews them. But I think the whole board needs to be involved in that, because it's one of those chemistry things.
That if we have an agenda item between now and the end of June,
we can work that out,
these questions, and have everything in place well in advance of, you know, any scheduling questions in terms of actual interviews or whatnot. And the other thing that I think we should talk about at that time is there was the suggestion in this memo that the day-to-day oversight of the clerk might be something the town manager should do. And I think we should discuss that then. Right now, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, you have no day-to-day oversight. I mean, you're basically the mayor doesn't check in on you. I certainly don't. I know Jackie doesn't. But in other words, you know, especially with a new person coming in, we're going to need that.
I was going to say, Sarah provides oversight.
Exactly. But the new person will not.
Well, I agree. We need to, that's an issue that needs an idea that we would have to have some discussion about. And I guess my gut reaction is I kind of agree with Jackie, but we can get into the details of what that process might look like when there's an agenda item in front of us. You just proposed a very specific scenario, and I guess I don't have a problem with having that written up and before us, as long as you're open to having it amended, potentially.
I'm proposing we discuss the points of board involvement. Who's going to do it?
I heard you request that the staff bring us a very specific proposal, i.e., one alderman involved early on, and then, you know, or whatever it was. So
yeah, I was just saying that was my thinking.
Okay.
As an example. I'm suggesting that my thinking is the end result.
So we need an agenda item where we will discuss this process in more detail and lay out the boards and kind of talk through what we agree as a group would be.
Well, I think
a good process.
Right. But I also think we need to confirm the schedule that's proposed so staff can get started.
Right. I wanted to ask a schedule question. Steve.
That makes sense to me.
Steve, from what I could see, has notification gone up, gone out that the position is available? Is it that?
No, we didn't want to get ahead of you all. We haven't done anything.
So what is the usual window of time that the application, I think it looked like it was 1 month.
Well, we'd laid that out actually a month and a half is what we'd suggested. That's typically for a position like this, we allow about 6 weeks.
And given this time of year, I mean, I looked at that and I was just concerned whether or not, you know, what kind of applicant pool we might capture.
California, Arizona, maybe a lot of people.
No, Arizona. New Jersey.
I'm talking about leaving Arizona. Budgets. Anyway,
Well, our proposal was to start advertising June 1st and run it through July 16th as a closing date.
Uh-huh.
And I believe with the kind of outlets that the town typically uses, and for people who are interested in making a move, they're going to be checking those outlets. Not many people are going to take a 6-week vacation and not look at anything, I don't think. So if it's not a large applicant pool, I don't think it'll be because of the time of year.
Uh-huh.
And Steve, is there any reason that prior to July 16th you can't begin reviewing applications and even potentially scheduling interviews with people who are rising to the top?
Well, yes to the first part, no to the second part, because I think it's unfair to start scheduling interviews until we know what the entire applicant pool is. Unless you all direct otherwise, you know, we'd laid out a process where at least the initial interviews, sort of the screening interviews, would be done by staff. Let's say we get 50 applicants, I don't know, but we certainly wouldn't propose interviewing 50 people. Mm-hmm. We would take the top whatever number and screen those and then bring those to you all and let you all decide how many of those you would want to talk to. That's what we're suggesting. And I've recruited a lot of positions in the last zillion years, and I've never started an interview process until the closing date for the applicants.
Right. Well, I think, and I take your point, Dan, about trying to be aggressive about dealing with this situation, which I support what you're saying, but I think it's also worth recognizing that, I mean, you know, we have someone deputized to be the deputy town clerk to fill in. So, I mean, it's not, ideally
we would. About that. The concern is that there's a window of time in which Sarah's available to train someone. And that, to me, is
right.
What we need to maximize, because, you know, we may get to September and, you know, our ideal person needs 6 weeks before they can start work. You know, so we're cutting down that window. That's all I'm saying.
I don't want that concern to sort of wind up somehow trumping making sure that this board has, you know, adequate input into reviewing the applications and making the ultimate decision.
Right. So, and what I'm saying is that we should figure out a process so that our adequate input happens in the most expeditious manner possible.
So you're saying similar things. So
okay. Well, we'll look forward to the agenda item.
I also, thanks. And I don't know if this is, you know, the way it's done, but under the circumstances with, you know, Sarah's, you know, institutional memory and her, you know, Sarah is the town clerk. You know, we look up town clerk and it says Sarah Williamson. You know, this is Carbo. you know, if there's a set of things that, like a, you know, a checklist of things that you might share with us in looking at this process. I don't know if that's something that you and Steve had talked about potentially providing us, that, you know, through the interview process, whoever, you know, on the board is involved, at least be able to have some way of seeing your perspective on it, other than, you know, you're actually being involved on some level, but some checklisted list, because when someone is basically, you know, the position is almost tailored around, you know, one personality for such a long time, I think it's highly, you know, informs the transition if we have some kind of a checklist to look at.
You want a checklist?
I think it would be good for the board to come up with a checklist also of things you would like to see.
Well, yeah, But I just think that, you know, there may be things we, you know, from our side, there's one set of skills. From your side, there may be things that you want us to be aware of that we may not be thinking of.
So we'll have several checklists.
Did you have one other matter?
Mark?
Yeah, I did.
Before you move forward, so we're clear, are we to do anything at this point? Because the schedule is premised upon us starting getting ads out.
Yeah,
June
1st. On this.
Yeah,
and,
definitely.
And, you know, we would, unless you all suggest otherwise, we would take the existing job description that has been reviewed by Sarah and been pulled the key items from that to put in the ad. We also suggested a salary range that we typically would put in the ad, so you all need to tell us if that's appropriate to go ahead with that or leave the salary out.
That's yours. I was going to suggest, I thought I might have done this already, that perhaps among the resources the league has, you know, they might also have like some kind of boilerplate job description for a clerk. I don't know if they do or not, but if they do, it might like glean some things that we're not thinking about, you know, that could be important.
Well, it could be, Dan, but I mean, we have a job description that was prepared by professionals and reviewed by Sarah, and that there are certain things, the basic clerk duties are spelled out in the statutes. Uh-huh. There's some things unique to Carrboro that Sarah might do that,
right,
you know, a clerk in another community might not do, and I think those are the kind of things that when you develop the questions that you want to ask, those are the things you need to key on.
But what I'm suggesting is there might be some things that aren't in the statute and that aren't unique to Carrboro and that, in fact, aren't currently done in Carrboro that might be of interest to us. Like, just for example, you know, not that this is necessarily the clerk's responsibility, but something the clerk's involved in, you know, we are not in the cutting edge in our use of technology, and it's because we haven't put the resources into that. You know, it's nothing to do with any particular job description, but, you know, there may be places where the clerk plays a role in that. I don't know if they do or not, but, you know, so that's all I'm suggesting.
I think it's a fair enough point. I suspect that when it comes to the North Carolina League of Municipalities, that it's completely the reverse, that we're way out in front of them in terms of what our expectations would be. But anyway, but I think it's worth it. Certainly be worth taking a look at.
But we're agreed that they should go ahead and run the ads.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so.
Good. Okay, so just real quick, Steve, are the minimum qualifications for the ad, are they available to us, or can you say them, or can we see the ad before it runs, just so we kind of know what it says? Or?
Yeah, I mean, you can see it, but if we get into everybody voting on
wordsmithing
about. Yeah, no, I'm just.
We'll never
I'm
get
just,
the ad
I'm
out.
Sure, and I have no idea if it's going to say.
No one's allowed to make minor.
Well, I can tell you that the job description now calls for a 2-year degree or equivalent experience, and I think looks for some local government experience. And we would generally put, you know, a few of the major items like, you know, attend board meetings, those kind of things, so that people who apply understand that it involves evenings and those sorts of things. Desiree, if I've left something out, please jump in, but I mean, we're not talking about a page-long ad because these things cost. I mean, we're talking about trying to be fairly succinct, and anybody who wants to see the longer job description can have access to that. And then we'd put the salary range in there, and then we'd put the closing date for the application. But we would plan to send you all that anyway. It's a question about whether or not you all want to review it in advance of us putting it out or not.
Right. I was just curious about the typical minimum qualifications.
Yeah. Maybe just as an informational matter, you could copy us on.
Okay.
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 All right. Last but not least,
you can have a checklist.
That's true. I just want to know if the board, how receptive the board is to supporting and endorsing the boycotts on Arizona that we hear. I know it may not
would
directly.
Would you like to take a guess?
Yeah. Well,
I guess the question is, would the board care to entertain a resolution on this matter at an upcoming agenda?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next week.
Make sure you include their school stuff.
I mean, I can't wear
too.
My Arizona Birkenstocks.
No, I'll be interested in seeing the resolution. I want to think about it a little bit. I mean, clearly I don't support what's going on there, but I'm not sure how.
I don't believe that such a resolution would call on the town government
right.
to somehow boycott the state of Arizona. We can't. I don't believe we can do that legally. But I think it's more of a proposed endorsement.
I just want to see it.
All right.
We cannot watch the Western Conference NBA playoffs.
I'm going to not do so many things that involve Arizona. It's incredible. All right. Well, we'll look forward to having that on an upcoming agenda.
Speaking of Arizona, it'd be interesting to go home and see the results of your primary.
Oh yeah, well, and many others. All right.
That's right.
Is there a motion to adjourn? Actually, I take it as one. All the it's moved and seconded.
Aye.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, matter passes.
So Jack, what did you just say?